down. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner talking home run. Touchdown. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner like.
All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, March 24th, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we're going to start off talking about the Formula One Chinese Grand Prix at the Shanghai International Circuit, and then we're going to move on to talk about the IndyCar Grand Prix of Thermal at the Thermal Club Circuit in Thermal, California. All right, so let's talk about the Chinese Grand Prix. The race itself was rather uneventful. It was, to put it kindly, it was extremely boring. I stayed up till 5:30 in the morning because the race didn't even start till 3 a.m. Eastern time, so that was fun. But I did that for love of the game. Either way, the race wasn't really that exciting, but we did learn some things that we might have known from the first race in Australia that have kind of been confirmed, and there were some other really big things. So first and foremost, we have basically gotten confirmation that McLaren is the best team. On Saturday, there was the sprint race, and Lewis Hamilton won that one for Ferrari in rather dominating fashion, and neither of the McLarens was really in contention, which led some people to believe that, hey, is McLaren vulnerable? Was Melbourne just a mirage? No. No, it wasn't. Because they got a front row lockout. Then Oscar Piastri started the race from pole, took off, and drove off into the sunset with his teammate Lando Norris driving in a close-ish second, and they just kind of stayed that way. The race itself was a one-stop, so there wasn't much strategy involved, and it was very, very boring. But this kind of has confirmed to an extent that, yeah, McLaren has the best car. Their car, when it's in the window, is just absolutely dominant, and even when it's really not in the window, it's still the fastest car. And we'll get to we'll talk about some other things we've learned regarding the McLarens later on. But other than the McLarens, we've also learned that Mercedes is the clear number two team on the grid, at least in my opinion. George Russell and Kimi Antonelli are a pretty decent pair, and their car, on the whole, is a very well-rounded car, doesn't have a lot of serious, clear drawbacks, and they were the number two team on the grid. George Russell got another podium, finished third, while Kimi Antonelli finished fourth or fifth or sixth, somewhere in there. And it became clear watching that was the pecking order. It's McLaren, which is a Mercedes customer team, then the works Mercedes team, then things get kind of interesting. So the Red Bull, for instance, is a deeply flawed car. So Liam Lawson started 18th in Melbourne. Then he started 20th in the Shanghai sprint race. Then started 20th from the pit lane for the Chinese Grand Prix, which is just dreadful. And by all accounts, the Red Bull is incredibly hard to drive. It's super peaky, it's got a lot on the nose, and it doesn't have a lot of stability, and it's hard to drive. Even Max Verstappen has admitted that not only is the car not really that fast, it's very hard to drive, even for him. And he, being the best driver in the world right now, it's very difficult for him to drive. So the Red Bull is very flawed, and I don't think they're going to be a serious contender for the Drivers' Championship or the Constructors' Championship unless they come up with some really big upgrades that really change things for that Red Bull. Because, damn, that thing has all sorts of problems. Speaking of all sorts of problems, Ferrari. They're a distant third in the speed category. Their car has issues. It's not super fast. It doesn't take care of its tires real well. And the Ferraris just had a generally okay race. They were never really in super huge contention. They were kind of hanging around in that, like, 6-9 category back-to-back. Now, Lewis Hamilton did play the team game where he told his team that they should swap him and Charles Leclerc because he was leading Leclerc, but he wasn't really going fast enough as he thought. So when Leclerc finally caught up to him, they swapped and Leclerc led for a while and Hamilton led and they went back and forth. but he really played the team game, which is interesting to see considering this is only the second race he's done with the Ferrari team. But the Ferrari team is very much battling it out with Racing Bulls, Red Bull, and
Williams
for that like third, fourth, fifth spot because it's kind of murky in the middle of the field. Now, the Racing Bulls have, in my opinion, the fourth fastest car. I think they're faster than the Red Bull. They're just held back by strategy, which Yuki Tsunoda, he's a really good driver. The Racing Bulls are good, but man, that team is the worst strategy team in the entire series. Everyone else said, yeah, it's going to be a put the hard tires on and do a one-stop race. But what does Racing Bulls do? Well, it's going to be a two-stop. So while Yuki Tsunoda's hanging around in 7th, midway through the race, they pit him a second time and he goes back to 16th and he's just marooned there in the low teens because his team is incompetent. And the problem is, getting upgraded to the Red Bull team might be a downgrade because that car is a satanic devil-worshipping hellscape. It's awful. So, really disappointing performance from the Racing Bulls. Their strategy didn't work, and it really boned Yuki Tsunoda, which is really disappointing. Now, speaking of the Red Bull team in and of itself, Liam Lawson's F1 career isn't long for this world. He's embarrassingly slow, and he's arrogant, which is the worst part. He talks mad crap for a guy in 20th place. He's nowhere. He doesn't qualify good. He doesn't perform well. He's in a Red Bull. He should be at least in the top half of the grid, but he's not. And he has no chance of being. And it's to the point now where after two regular races and a sprint race, all of which where he was irrelevant, there's rumors that Red Bull is calling an emergency team meeting where I think they're going to fire him and get someone else to drive for the Japanese Grand Prix in a couple of weeks because Liam Lawson is just so bad. And I don't even know if it's his fault because the Red Bull is such a hard car to drive, but either way, if Red Bull wants even a chance of getting a good constructor's finish, they have got to have a number two driver who can even finish in the top 15, let alone finishing higher than 20th. It's embarrassing, and I think he's going to get fired. So moving on, I mentioned earlier that there was questions of McLaren's real pace because was it a mirage? Was Melbourne's conditions just good for the McLaren? Well, another reason why we had those questions is because during the week between the two races, Formula One put out a technical directive narrowing the acceptable flex of the rear wing main plane, the main element of the rear wing, to a half a millimeter either up or down from the newly directed 2 millimeters up or down that was changed between the 2024 and 2025 season. Many saw this as clamping down on McLaren's flexi wings and all this, but McLaren themselves said, yeah, we didn't change anything on the car, and this new regulation, while it might ultimately be more stringent, didn't really change McLaren's performance at all in the race. It didn't seem to affect anything. So I don't know why they did it, if it didn't do anything, but that's not my decision to make, I guess. Now, lastly, and this last thing, this happened after I'd gone to sleep. This was crazy. Both of the Ferraris were disqualified for breaking two different rules, which blows my mind. So, some background. On the first lap of the race, Charles Leclerc bumped his teammate Lewis Hamilton, and it tore the end plate off of his front wing. Now, his front wing basically drooped onto the track for the whole race, but for some reason, magically, his car was faster, even though it was aerodynamically compromised. But that's just some background. So, after the race, Lewis Hamilton was disqualified because the rear skid plate underneath his car came in too thin by a fraction of a millimeter. Because there's a skid plate underneath the car that has to be a certain thickness. That way, it prevents teams from setting up their cars too low to the ground. There's specific rules. So the fact that the rear skid plate underneath Lewis Hamilton's car came in too thin was a violation of the rules. So he was disqualified and sent to the back of the grid. Then Charles Leclerc was disqualified because his car came in 1 kilogram underweight. So the car came in at like 800 kilograms and a half a kilogram once they had swapped out a fresh front wing for Parc Fermé after the race for testing and diagnostics and all that. Then, as per rule, Formula One took 2 kilograms of fuel out of the fuel tank and weighed the car again. And it came up as 799 and like a quarter kilograms, which is under the 800 kilogram limit. So both of the Ferraris were disqualified, which is just insane. That's never happened in history where both Ferraris have been disqualified in the same race, let alone being disqualified for breaking two different rules. It was crazy. I woke up to that story on Sunday and that was like, holy shit, what happened? That was the most exciting thing that happened in the race, and it happened after the race even ended because there was so little passing in the Chinese Grand Prix. All right, that's enough about Formula One. Now let's turn our attention to IndyCar. So yesterday, the IndyCar series was in the Coachella Valley in Thermal, California at the Thermal Club, and they had a race that was exactly what it was. It was one of the races of all time. Either way, let's get into what happened in that race and talk about all the crazy things that happened. So, to start us off, Alex Palou, the four-time champion, feels rather inevitable. For background, Pato O'Ward, the McLaren driver, my personal favorite driver, he got the pole in qualifying. It was the first pole he's had since 2022. It was awesome. And then he led 51 of the first 55 laps. Then Alex Palou said, "Get out of the way, son. It's my turn to shine." And he passed Pato with 10 laps to go, drove off into the sunset, and won the race rather easily. It was supremely demoralizing. Now, the reason Palou was able to do this was because he's the best driver in the field, on the best team in the field, but it was also because this was a race where the softer red sidewall tires were significantly better than the black, harder sidewall tires. And McLaren thought that the tire deg they had been seeing all weekend in practice and qualifying would have transferred to the race, really. And the black tire would have been the best combo. So Pato O'Ward started the race on his only set of sticker, brand new, unused red soft tires, jumps out to this huge 10-point lead in his first stint. Then he proceeds to get on black tires for the rest of the race. Meanwhile, Palou started off on used reds, did a stint on other reds, did a stint on some black tires, and then his final stint was on a pair of brand new sticker red tires. And this gave him a huge advantage over Pato O'Ward and Pato's teammate Christian Lundgaard, who started third. So Pato is on hard tires. He's 12 seconds out front with like 14 laps to go. Alex Palou gets out of the pits, 14 laps to go. He immediately passes Christian Lundgaard, then tracks down Pato in two laps, passes Pato, takes over by the 55th lap or so, and just drives off into the sunset. It's no big deal. He wins by, 9.5 seconds, if I remember correctly. It was demoralizing. Considering Alex Palou won at St. Pete in rather dominating fashion and simply drove past Pato in rather dominating fashion at Thermal, this begs the question, is championship over? It's only been 2 weeks, but it feels like the championship is over because the next race is in Long Beach in 3 weeks. After that, they're at Barber Motorsports Park in Alabama, another road course. Then the month of May starts, and with the month of May, we get the Indy Road Course, which is a race he'll probably dominate. I mean, if Alex Palou wins the first 5 races of the season, it ain't over, but it's over. So this begs the question, not only is the championship over, but was this race at Thermal a missed opportunity for McLaren or merely the reality of the season. And I think it might have been a little bit of both, because clearly the red tire was the way to go. And McLaren used up a whole bunch of red tires for all of their cars in qualifying, which helped Pato get the pole. So in that regard, that was a positive, because it actually helped Pato Award get to the front, which he struggled with starting 23rd in St. Pete. So from that sense, it isn't a missed opportunity because it helped McLaren get to the front. But using up all the red tires in qualifying left them with only one set of sticker red tires in the race, that the red tires were the ideal ticket. So it was a gamble that didn't pay off. And sometimes that happens. But on the other hand, Alex Palou is the best, most consistent driver in the entire series. He's so good, he probably should be driving in Formula One. Red Bull, call this man in 2026. Seriously, he'd be a great number two driver. But that won't happen because Formula One is fickle like that. So, beyond Alex Palou and Pato Award and Christian Lundgaard, there was a lot of other things that happened in the race at Thermal. Will Power started the race in 21st and finished in a stunning 6th place, an excellent recovery driver from the Indy 500 winner and multi-time champion. The need for a recovery driver such as this one was largely the result of the fact that the Penske trio qualified horribly. They started 20th, 22nd, and 21st. Or something like that. It was like 20th, 21st, and 25th or something like that. For Will Power to drive all the way to 6th place in a track that isn't really known for passing is extremely impressive. And it begs the question, what could the Penskes have done if they had started further up the field? Even if it was just 10 places further up the field. In 11th or so, you know. In that same vein, Meyer Shank Racing, which is the smaller midfield team that has a technical partnership with Chip Ganassi Racing, had an amazing finish where one of their drivers finished in 5th and the other finished in 7th, those drivers being Marcus Armstrong and Felix Rosenqvist. And considering those two drivers started 7th and 9th, that's already impressive enough for a team that's a smaller team, but the 5th and 7th place finishes are incredibly rewarding for a smaller team that doesn't win a lot and really doesn't contend a lot. And that, I think, portends to their enhanced pace in 2025 compared to seasons past where, yeah, they might surprise you in the odd occasion, but they largely were just mired in the middle of the field, out of the way. So, to see Marcus Armstrong and Felix Rosenqvist do so well is really encouraging as we get into the depths of the season where there's a lot more tracks that are complicated, like Long Beach or Road America and some of the ovals. So, on the negative side, Prema Racing, which is a famous Formula 2 Junior Series sports car team, Prema, their new IndyCar team continued to struggle. So, Robert Schwartzman, the rookie, started 27th, didn't turn a single lap in any practice round, and then finished in 22nd place. And he was doing better than that, but mistakes in the pits ultimately doomed him. Meanwhile, his teammate, Callum Ilott, he crashed into his teammate, Robert Schwartzman, dooming his race, and he ended up finishing 26th of 27. So it was ultimately just a disastrous race on all fronts. And this is following up the equally disastrous race at St. Pete, where neither car finished particularly well. And this really points to how difficult it is for a new team to just come in on their own without a technical partnership and succeed in IndyCar. So I don't want to say look for this team to let collapse go away, but boy, are they on bump watch for Indy. And we'll get into that later in the season, but it was bad. It was just really, really bad. Now, other bad was disastrous. There was a disastrous result from Penske driver Scott McLaughlin. All of the Penskes started bad, but Scott McLaughlin was really bad. He qualified 25th, which was just stunningly mediocre for a Penske. And he paced around in the back of the field, and then a hybrid issue forced him out, and he ended up retiring and finishing 27th and last. It was really bad. And it was unexpectedly bad because the Penskes were in the hunt in practice and qualifying, but then they just qualified horribly, and that was that. So I don't know what the solution is for the Penske's, but they got to find something before Long Beach because, boy, oh boy, it was bad, bad. Now, the big controversy with the race was a series of embarrassing technical issues on the part of the broadcast where the booth and control center just lost all power. So from lap 27 to 40, nobody saw the race. There is no video recording of it. It's just gone. Poof, like it never even happened. And instead, we got three commercial breaks and two long stretches where they just ducked into the NASCAR race at Homestead, Miami, which was happening at the same time. And that was just so bad because there were other times where they missed on-track action cutting to something else, or they would linger on the wrong thing too long, and the graphics are still kind of being worked out. And then to just have this horrible outage and just lose the broadcast for the middle chunk of the race, the broadcast missed an entire tire stint. Pato O'Ward pitted for the second time. We never saw it. Then he pitted for the third time, and we never saw it. We missed that entire stretch of the race, an entire tire stint where he was in first on his second stint. Then we just never saw the third stint, and he had already come out for his fourth and final stint, and it was just like, okay, here we are. It's lap 40. There's 15 laps to go. It was so bad. And the race was, I'm a huge Pato fan, so I was enjoying watching Pato just cruise around in the lead, but it was a boring race. Nothing really happened until the last 15 laps where Pelot decided, okay, enough screwing around, time for me to go win this thing. And he just put on the right tires and won the race. And it was just blah, blah, blah. So IndyCar needs to do a better job. They need to have more redundancies. Whatever they need to do to make sure that never happens again, they need to do it because that was bad. Like, the entire world just couldn't watch IndyCar for 25 minutes. And it just happened to be in a pivotal section of the race where they didn't even really explain what happened. It was like, welcome back, sorry for the disturbance. Yeah, nothing's really changed the front, but we're just going to move on. They didn't tell us what tires people had changed on, when people had pit, what was going on in the race, if there had been any big movers and shakers, nothing. It was just, well, welcome back. Okay, here's what's happening. Ultimately, this was the last year of a two-year deal for IndyCar at Thermal, and I don't know if the series should return to Thermal. I think so. But I also don't think so because it's a boring track and it's only a limited amount of fans are allowed to even go because it's technically a private club circuit and like tickets were like $500 a piece and the races have been kind of boring, but I guess there are rumors of changes, but who knows? Ultimately, I hope they come back because you don't like to see track, you know, IndyCar lose tracks, but it was a tough afternoon. Now, if they do come back, they need to do a different track layout because the one they're doing, while it's impressively technical, it's a little boring. The first five or six corners could change. Like, they have an alternate layout where basically you cut out turns 2, 3, 4, and 5. And you just go from turn 1, there's a short straight, and then you just go to turn 6. It's like 6/10 of a mile shorter than the track it is right now. And I think that needs to be done because the turns are all windy and it spreads the field out and there's not really a place to pass until you get to like turn 7. But if you just cut out turns 2 through 5 and just go 1 to 6, you get a series of faster corners and a longer straight that maybe sets up a pass. And not only that, I think they also need to do some variation of their GT circuit where basically after turn 12, you would do a fast right turn to the northern part of the track that's a little more Mickey Mouse in certain parts, but you have a long straight, you have a chance for a hairpin, maybe you give some better, higher speed corners and a chance to pass, and it makes the track a little longer, while also giving the venue more opportunities to put in grandstands because you don't have this giant interior section of the track that's inaccessible to fans and everything. So if they come back in 2026, I really hope they make some changes. Otherwise, it's going to be boring again, and Alex Palou is going to win again. Now, looking forward to the rest of the 2025 season, I think Alex Palou is going to win a lot because he did last year, and then the ovals kind of came around, and it got interesting, but he stayed in the lead and he won the championship. So if he wins in Long Beach in 3 weeks, I think that's a wrap. it'll be done because he's just, he is that guy. Fingers crossed, though. Maybe my boy Pato can get a win. He's got seven of them, but it's been a minute. Us McLaren fans are loving Formula One right now, but IndyCar is a bit of a struggle. So that'll do it for this episode. I want to thank all of you who are watching on YouTube. I have a small channel that doesn't really get recommended. So if you're listening, that means you found, you searched out my YouTube channel. So thank you for that. If you're watching, like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon, do all the things to help grow the channel. For all of you listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever else podcasts are available, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you can, leave a like, leave a like. If you can, leave a review, leave a review. I appreciate everything you can do to help the channel. Now, if that means spreading the word to your friends, your family, your dead relatives using a Ouija board, do it. Help grow the channel. So next week, I have decided that I am going to do the spring football episode. I don't know how that's going to work, but I'll figure something out that'll be very interesting. So next week, for March 31st, it'll be the need for spring football. All right. My name is H. James K. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time.